Hi there, listener. It's Matthew. You've come looking for an episode of the Children's Book Podcast, and you've found it. Hooray! But you're probably wondering why the name of the podcast has changed. After 8 years of doing the Children's Book Podcast, I began a new career as head of podcasts at A Kids Company About, where I now oversee a podcast network dedicated to producing original content that talks up to kids, centers the things going on in their world, and engages and challenges how they see the world and themselves. All of the episodes of the Children's Book Podcast are still here, but now, if you're subscribed, you'll get new episodes of Worth Noting, a kids podcast about current events, hosted by me. Something for you and the young people in your life to enjoy together. Enjoy this episode, and I hope you'll check out Worth Noting and other podcasts from A Kids Company About. The Let's Get Busy podcast is brought to you by All the Wonders, a home for readers to discover new books and to experience the stories they love in new ways. Go beyond the book at allthewonders.com. Welcome to Let's Get Busy, a weekly podcast where I talk shop and get down to business with authors, illustrators, award winners, up-and-comers, and everyone in between. I'm Matthew Winner. This is episode number 214 of the podcast with Gus Gordon, author-illustrator of Herman and Rosie. Actually, Gus is the author-illustrator of a bunch more books, but I'm kind of obsessed with Herman and Rosie. It's sort of a When Harry Met Sally picture book, only completely and absolutely engaging and perfect for the child being read to as well as the adult reading it. I love when picture books pull that off, and this one does that better than most I know. Plus, Gus is a truly wonderful guy. That doesn't hurt. I hope you find yourself falling in love with this book as well. Here's episode number 214 of the podcast with Gus Gordon. Let's get busy. Welcome to the podcast, Gus Gordon. I'm so excited to have you here on Let's Get Busy.
Thanks so much for having me. You've had some amazing people over the years. That must have been fun, huh?
It's over the years. To even hear you say that, it's kind of blowing my mind. It's been 2 years and time has flown. I mean, it is. It's been a crazy 2 years. And what I love, Gus, and I'm going to say this to you up front, is that I always get to talk to people that I am fans of, that I've seen a book or three or five of theirs. And yeah. I love their stuff, and I've read their books in our library to children and to my own children. And so to have you here, to have our paths connect, and to get to talk about Herman and Rosie is a big deal for me, because this is a book that I've had around for a couple years, and I love this book.
Thank you. Thanks so much.
That's so nice. By proxy, I love you. Yay!
That's great. I know I'm just stoked to be a part of the podcast. It just looks like you've interviewed someone every 10 minutes.
Sometimes it feels like that. I will tell you, I'm sort of I don't know if I want to use that word and get it stuck in people's heads, but I'm sort of a glutton for wanting to talk to friends and make connections. I really love feeling connected. And when I first started and I was talking to one person a week, it was exciting. But then when there was greater interest and more people were like, sure, I'd love to come on, I thought, well, I can't say no. Sure. Come on. Let's talk.
Fantastic. You're lucky, huh?
I'm blessed that people keep saying, yes, I must be doing okay. I must not be driving too many people away.
No, that's good. That's good.
Well, and I'm excited too when I get to talk to you, people such as yourself, Gus, that in your case, to talk to someone from Australia, because it's a fascinating thing for me to understand how publishing in different countries or in different continents works and what happens when they come over to the States, but also when our books go to other places. And so I thank you in advance for the insight you'll be able to share. And also I just love that someone from another country or another part of our country just tends to story tell differently than regionally people tend to. So it's always great to connect with different people, because seeing their different approach is really fascinating to me.
Yeah, well, okay, that's great. Because, I mean, be interested to hear your insights, because just the way everyone tells stories is different. I'm not sure it's different so much where you live as far as the countries go. I don't know.
Okay, let me just call it out. And then I'm going to, yeah. I can't go too far without throwing you some love for Herman and Rosie, but I will start with this.
Okay.
Consistently, when I talk to someone from the UK,
yes,
I always feel, and I said this to Sophie Henn when I talked to her recently, she wrote Were Bear and a new one called Pom Pom Panda Gets the Grumps.
Oh, okay.
And I tend to feel like the people I've spoken, maybe it's just the people I've spoken with, but those people from the UK tend to write very strong character-driven stories where the character, where there's some sort of emotion personified fully in this character. And so we see this emotion of ourselves or this experience of ourselves personified so loudly and so completely in this character. There's just an undeniable connection you make to the characters. And that is just sort of a thing that I've noticed. And it could just be my own insight on it, but Sophie's books and Steve Anthony's books and Chris Houghton, I felt the same way with, and it's wonderful. I love that about it. And when I am reading yours, I'm thinking, and when I read like Conor Brecken, I was saying too that I've spoken to him, and it's not that it's so different, but it does feel different. Like for Herman and Rosie, this feels like sort of this story in particular.
Yep.
And this is the one that I know you for. So I should just say full disclosure that I know you for one, that I love you for one. And this story, the way that you so completely just are describing how I feel, every aspect of Herman and of Rosie from not necessarily who they are, but what they do, what their friends would tell us about them. Is sort of a thing that I notice with Kana too. And it could just be the two of you, but I sort of love that it's not there's one emotion that rules them all, perhaps, but rather it's just, well, here's the information I've gathered from all of their friends.
Okay.
You know, sort of you're researching, character exploring, perhaps, while you are developing this story. I don't know your process, but it comes across that way, and I sort of love it for that. It feels just a little different.
Okay, and I think this is something to do with being perhaps an author and an illustrator.
Okay,
that when how the ideas develop from the beginning, and I'm often asked about this, you know, what comes first, whether it's words, ideas in that way, or perhaps a drawing, and it's always a drawing. So my books tend to be very character orientated, probably because they started out as a drawing in a sketchbook. So, you know, for instance, Herman began in one of my sketchbooks, and I don't really know why. You can't really look into these things too much, but he just arrived. I often think in many ways I don't find them sort of so much. They find me, which is very bizarre, I know, but so I drew this crocodile in a suit on a rooftop playing a musical instrument. And so then, of course, and you're always drawing in the hope that you'll do something that is going to be thought-provoking and ask lots of questions. So in this case, it was like, wow, okay, why have I drawn a crocodile? Why is he in a suit? Does that mean he has a job? What does that mean? Why, you know, is he on a rooftop? He looks very serene there playing his music, and it asks lots of questions. So it always begins as this character that's arrived one day, and then I'm sort of have to figure out, delve into it to find out what this character's all about, and is there a story there, you know?
Well, so maybe it's those questions that I'm seeing answers to that are appealing so much to me. And I love that you're actually describing sort of this out of body experience with the character that you sort of are drawing. I'm picturing you sketching out this character, then suddenly your consciousness is snapping to and going like, oh, who's this person now? Let me figure out who this is.
That's exactly what it is. It's the same with all of my books that are like that, because they begin as a character in a sketchbook, and then I'm like going, this is exciting. You know, you get on a run and you draw, and then bang it, inevitably the flow stops and then you've got to put it away and try and solve some problems.
Well, but, so yeah. You bring up about those questions. Do you mind if I read to you and the listening audience the beginning of Herman and Rosie?
No,
because
go ahead, yeah.
that gets right at these questions that I see answered and that I love about this. So here we go. And we'll talk about sort of what the story is beyond this, but let me just read.
Sure.
Herman lived on the 7th floor. He liked potted plants, playing the oboe, wild boysenberry yogurt, the smell of hot dogs in the winter, and watching films about the ocean. Rosie lived on the 5th floor in the building next door. She liked pancakes, listening to old jazz records, the summertime subway breeze, toffees that stuck to her teeth, singing on the fire escape, and watching films about the ocean.
Hmm.
I mean, there, you're not, yeah. Herman is an alligator who likes to play the oboe.
Yeah.
Rosie lives next door and sings out her window all night long. No, but it paints a picture that, I mean, I think, so I'm sort of eternally thinking of my students, right?
Sure.
But I think of the way that we could describe ourselves. And I could sit here and say, I'm a male. I'm a teacher. I'm 34 years old. I have 2 children. I'm a husband. I could say all these things. But to describe myself for the way that my friends might say how I stand out or what they love most about me is such an intimate way, right from the bat, to introduce the readers to the character that I just feel like, again, you're starting with this intimacy that we immediately care about these characters.
Well, that's okay. That's really cool. A few things to address there. So for me, you know, you've only got these 32 pages to tell the story. And because, like it or not, I had decided that this story was about 2 characters. So they shared the story equally throughout. And so you've got this dual narrative running together. And in a, you know, hopefully balanced fashion. And so I don't have a lot of time or pages to introduce the characters to the reader. So in some ways I thought I've got to really just spell them out like a shopping list almost, almost like, and this is going to sound really funny, but almost like a bad dating site or something, you know, like, in a really corny way, you know, I like long walks on the beach and pina coladas and blah, blah, blah. But that's probably the really worst analogy.
That is the greatest analogy I've ever heard about characters. Please let that be the soundbite forever.
Oh, gosh. Oh, I should probably just drop that completely. But the thing that really, I had an idea when I have a favorite film, and I'm not sure if you've seen this. It's a French film called Amelie.
Oh my word. It's the most beautiful.
Oh,
perhaps the only thing more beautiful is the follow-up when you to see A Very Long Engagement.
Yeah. Yeah.
But anyway, director's wonderful. But anyway, Amelie, yeah, very character-driven story there.
Oh, it's such a good story. And so in the opening, say, 5 minutes, and a mate of mine always says this, and he always says, and he's a writer, he always says, there are more ideas for stories in the opening 5 minutes than, you know, 20 movies put together sort of thing. He thinks there's the potential for, you know, offshoots for ideas going everywhere in that first 5 minutes is just so large, because all these lovely little peccadillos and quirks that these characters have, and it focuses on the simple little things that make people people and make characters, and rather than the big picture stuff, you know, I sort of decided to focus on the funny little quirky characteristics that people could perhaps resonate with on some level. And so that's where I got the idea in that film that I could, you know, hot dogs in the winter, that sort of stuff. quite sort of unique little quirks that these characters have, and so I literally listed them like a shopping list, because you don't have time to, with 2 characters, to introduce them over a number of different pages because you got to jump into the story so fast.
Yeah. Well, and to have to share with the listeners that have not yet seen this book, that we have these two characters, we have Herman and Rosie, and they live nearby in the city, as I read in the opening passage. But they sort of both come into turns with what they're working on that end them out of an opportunity for pursuing their livelihood for the moment. Herman gets kicked out of his job selling things. I love that you quote selling things. And Rosie singing at the club every night, singing her heart out, but the club closes, ends up, I guess just to call it out, desperately, every time I read this book, every single time I read this book, so desperately, I'm like, will they please get together? Please, you're running out of pages. I need you two to get together, find one another. Yeah. And it's in such a, I think as an adult, what I put on this story is that it's this like wonderful love story where you just have these star-crossed lovers that keep missing one another. But it's not a love story in that way at all. It's just sort of a story of two people that need to find each other.
That's true. That's probably a good way to summarize it. They need to find each other for many different reasons. It's not necessarily a love story. They're passionate about music, and that just happens to be the thing, I guess, that the main thing that they're interested in. But, of course, throughout you can sort of see that there are other things that they have in common as well. And throughout the book, obviously the motivation was to keep them apart as long as I could get away. even to the point when they finally do meet, when they order the same hot dogs in Central Park. And then I just pull them apart again, just that one last time, just to tease the reader. You know, hopefully they're still with me at this stage. But then they're a little bit happier because there's something in that moment of meeting that re-energizes them and brings them back to their passions, and hence, you know, obviously they meet in the end. So
Well, I was quite thankful actually that it didn't end with hearts floating above their heads, but rather ended with music, because music is such a strong tie in here. And I'd be doing you a disservice if I didn't share that my favorite line in this book might be my favorite line of almost any picture book. It is something that I have remembered for years. The book came out in the States in 2013. And we got it right away. I remember just reading review of it somewhere and just having it. We opened a brand new school. I opened a brand new school. So I had the blessing of going through many, 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 many magazines, journals to be able to buy a lot of books. And try to pride myself on reading as many of the books in our library as I possibly can. Okay, so let me also preface this, that I'm married to a music teacher, and music is a very important thing in both of our lives. So not to spoil the story, but just to share my favorite line, to contextualize it for the listeners there. Let's say that Herman goes up on the rooftop and plays his oboe, and Rosie sings out of her window, and they both hear these things, and they both like hearing the songs that each other are putting out there, though, despite not knowing really who is actually doing that. But Rosie at one point hears this oboe music, and it fills her and makes her feel so great. And the line you say is, "And it stayed in her head like good tunes do. She hummed it as often as she could, so it didn't fade away." Ah, my word. That is poetry on the page, Gus.
Really?
I think that is the phrase to me. That is the universal tie of you, the author, illustrator, to every single reader. Because that's what we do. And yet I don't see that on paper ever. I don't actually see many books where people are just walking around singing with a tune in their head. But just to call it out, that I heard this thing and I couldn't stop thinking of it, but I didn't want to forget it. So I just kept singing, kept trying to remember, what's that song? How does that song go? It's wonderful. I actually have had kids ask classmates to sing songs to them in class. How does that go? Sing it again. That sort of...
Oh, jeez. Merci, thank you.
Well, man, it's a storytelling quality, isn't it? Like, before we had words written down, people relied on storytellers saying these stories over and over so that we didn't forget. Mm. And so to bring it back to that pre-writing basic skill of we're doing this because I don't want to forget this. It's so important to me that I don't want to forget.
Mm.
It's beautiful to me.
That's the whole music thing though, isn't it? I mean, that it can really, and yeah, I think you said it can fill you up with joy, yes. You know, and that's what makes it so universal in many ways. And I'm sure would probably agree there aren't enough picture books where music is the central theme, where music is the main narrative chord throughout. So, which is in some ways bemusing because there really should be music should be appearing much more in picture books because it has such a power to connect people, doesn't it?
Yeah, I think that. In so many different ways, I feel like music is such a universal language that it sometimes surprises me that we don't just see it in every single thing that we do, because we all of us hum songs, tap our feet to things. It's just a thing that we do. But perhaps we're not aware that we're doing it. I don't know. I don't know. Maybe it was just the right book to find me in just my situation. And so that's also why it works so well with other readers, is that this book speaks to the right reader the right way.
It's interesting, isn't it? I mean, you don't really know until the book's out there, of course, whether or not it's going to work with people, whether or not it's going to resonate with anyone, to be honest. But I have had many people contact me who didn't even have kids, who were musos and jazz people contacted me from New York and from all around the world to say that they love the book. And yeah, some of them didn't have any kids or any nephews or nieces or anything. And I love that. I got a real kick out of that they saw something in there that they connected with.
That's amazing. Yeah, that's lovely.
There's no the expectations for these sorts of things. When you put a book out there, you have no idea whether it's going to stick. It's very much like music, isn't it? And that
it is.
I think it's the same if you're a singer or a songwriter. You write a song, you don't know if it's going to be a hit at all. You have absolutely no idea whether it's people are going to think, wow, this song is written for me.
Yeah, that feeling right there. That where it feels personal, where it feels like no one else is around. It's just this is for me. This book gets me, like this song gets me. Mm. I like that feeling.
Hey, so I do too. Yeah.
So let me ask then.
Yep.
How when you wrote this, you were, I assume it was sold to your Australian publisher. At what point at what point was it sold to the US?
Okay, so I'll explain what happened. I might just jump back a step.
Please.
So what happened is I had this idea for this book and I pitched it to my publisher and she said, yep, great, let's do it, thankfully. And then I said, well, you know, of course I've got to go to New York and do some research. And I'd been to New York several times before, but this time it was about the book and these characters. And so and a friend of mine said, hey, listen, while you're over there, you've got to see this guy I know called Neil Porter.
No.
This
guy I know is Neil Porter? Oh, my word.
Yeah, I know. And I didn't know who he was.
That's awesome.
I know. Look, isn't that lucky? And okay, so
for those that don't know who Neil Porter is, he's the guy behind many of the books that you love. New York editor, yeah. Yeah,
he's
wonderful.
He's very well respected, and
his imprint is strong. Yeah,
Yeah, he's a lovely bloke. And anyway, so I said, oh, okay. So I went over there and we hooked up to get together, and I met him in his apartment. and he said, oh, I really like your work, and what are you working on? And I said, oh, I've just got this idea for a book about New York and blah, blah, blah. And he's like, this looks really good. Can you keep me in the loop? And I said, yeah, sure. But you don't think much. People say these things sometimes, and just to be polite, which is cool. But anyway, so I did my research, came back, wrote the book, finished it, and my agent in New York, Charlie Olson at Inkwell, he said, soon as you can, get me a PDF. I'm going to send it around here. I'm really excited. I really want to send it out. And I said, okay. And so as soon as I did, I got a high-quality PDF of it, and he and I said, oh, you better send it to this bloke, Neil Porter, because he wanted to be to see it. And anyway, so within like 2 days, Charlie said, oh, it's blowing up over here. And then Neil Porter sent me an email himself. Right out of the blue, I got this email. I'll never forget it. The subject line said, good God.
God, you're giving me chills. Oh, my word.
I know. It still gives me chills thinking about it. And he said, good God. And then I read the email and said, Charlie sent me a book. I didn't even look to see whose name it was. I was on the train. I was reading it. And then I was halfway through and I suddenly realised it was Herman and Rosie. He goes, I don't know what's going to happen, you know, from here on in, but I just wanted to write and let you know that this book is every reason why I love New York. I want it, but we'll see what happens, blah, blah, blah. And so I was like, oh, my God, this is just crazy. And then all of a sudden I had all these publishers who wanted to chat to me about it. And then Charlie said, well, we're going to auction. I was like, oh, man, how does this work? And so, sure enough, it did, and Neil wanted it the most and bought the rights for it. And it's just crazy. After that, we just, you know, then Germany and went to auction there, and we went, you know, France and all the rest bit by bit. And then, you know, these things have a bit of a flow-on effect. Once someone gets it, then someone else will look with different eyes. I was just so lucky that, you know, all these little things lined together to make it sort of happen. And I don't know. It's a weird time. Surreal.
That's outstanding, though. That's, yeah. I mean, to have your book, again, you said you just write a book. You don't know who it's going to connect to. You write one book and then you move on to the next and you pour yourself into that book. But you don't know what's going to connect. And maybe even perhaps sometimes things connect with other people that you wouldn't have expected. That, oh, I really thought this would be the book that would be the one that would resonate, but it ends up being this one. But that, I don't know. That's awesome. That's really, really wonderful. And to hear that connection to Neil there, I have not met Neil, but a good number of my friends are friends with him because he connects to other people. And so I've seen him come up on my Facebook wall a good number of times and just always with people saying, what an outstanding guy he is.
He really is, and he's everything that you've probably heard before. He's just a very humble guy who you realise very quickly it's all about the books. It's not about – there's no ego there. Yeah. He's just a lovely, lovely man, and he just loves what he does, and that's why he's been doing it for so long and has so much respect,
well,
I suppose.
That also gives me that answer too about – how Herman and Rosie came to be exactly what it is, because I had even been thinking, well, I wonder if any changes happened if it was first published in Australia and then somebody else picked it up. It was making my brain wander to like, the end papers are great because it shows New York City. But then I thought, well, yeah, but this guy's from Australia. I wonder if this was like in Australia, if the book is Sydney or something. And then it was qualities were changed. So I love actually knowing that, oh, that was New York all along.
It was, Matthew, and it was kind of like these things sort of happened at the same time. So I already had a really good relationship with the city. I really liked, I love New York. And once I decided that, well, this book is about essentially two characters that are lonely in the city, you know, despite being surrounded by lots and lots of people, they're very lonely. And I thought, well, it's got to be New York because it's New York is like this ultimate urban environment where everyone lives very close together, almost in little boxes, and they might know the person across the corridor. And so I thought, wow, you know, it's a perfect place for it. And because it's such a universal city, it's almost like it's everyone's city in many ways. That's maybe why, I don't know, other countries can relate to it. I guess. I don't know.
I like that notion of New York being everybody's city. It certainly is sort of the great melting pot city of at least our country, maybe the entire world. Everybody comes there, everybody visits there, and everyone seems to feel a deep kinship to New York City because it just feels like, I don't know, to me it always feels like a really welcoming place. For all the times that I ever hear people joke about how people in New York seem a little standoffish, or maybe us people on the East Coast seem that, I feel like you always find out that though people have this maybe rough exterior, everyone is just so loving and sweet and kind and wanting to connect with other people. They just perhaps have their eyes facing downward to the sidewalk so much, and they don't look up perhaps often enough, but always good people in New York.
Yeah, they are, aren't they? And it's amazing, as they always say, how many New Yorkers are not in fact New Yorkers, didn't really grow up in New York, or they're from somewhere else. And that makes it great. Yeah, everyone's there to try and do something well. And I love it. That whole sense of ambition is quite powerful, isn't it?
Yeah, it's a beautiful place. I love that, then, to find out that someone from another country has like the same sort of, I mean, what a great connection. Yay.
Yeah.
You like the city too.
I do love it.
So I don't want to, our time is running out, and I don't like that because I like talking to you, Gus. I don't want to leave me.
Yeah, I'm enjoying it. This is good.
But I just have to ask, and there's no smooth way for me to go into it, so I'm just going to ask outright. Yeah. How did you make the art in Herman and Rosie? Or maybe in general, I've looked over the covers of your other books, and you've worked with people that I know Jill Esbaum, because I know a couple of the other books that she's written, which is great.
Yes.
I have yet to see I Am Cow, Hear Me Moo, but I'm excited because it just came out last year. So I have time. I'll look for it. But you've got a nice aesthetic going on that your characters feel like they are from the same world. And so what are the tools that you find yourself navigating toward when you're creating your illustration?
Yeah, so I'm a big one, as you no doubt seen, for collage. I really like collage, and especially, well, it's such a versatile medium in that you can use it to tell story. In many ways, it's the only medium that can do that, in the sense that if you use it in a sort of clever way, the collage itself has its own layer of narrative in that it can add and contribute to your story. And so I really like using found things like old maps and vintage engravings and old postcards and old ads, bits of old ads. And I like to put them together in such a way that they hopefully meld together with my line work and painting and so on. And so I paint and I draw everything at my desk, and then I scan it in to my computer with my collage as well, and I'll put it all together on the computer. So in, you know, Photoshop and lots of many, many layers.
Yeah.
In the hope that I can put it all together so that nothing is too distracting, so that the collage doesn't distract from the story to the readers reading the story. So that's how I put it all together. So a lot of found things all thrown together in the one picture, I guess.
Well, that's fun that it works that way, because I feel like I was seeing that in your illustration, that there are, maybe my favorite illustration in your whole book is poor Herman. He looks excited to be selling things, but Herman in this massive maze of cubicles, and it's just everything sort of is black and white except for this color popping from Herman, and also this office plant in the background.
yeah,
but it's the way you work in some of these, at times, the way you work in the collage elements is almost, it almost feels like an finding an Easter egg in the book. Because it's, oh, like wait, that. that's actually a real thing. That's not an illustration. And I've noticed that. And then we, as a reader, then you end up seeing like my son, my 5-year-old, in that picture in particular was pointing to the plant and asking what it was. Cause we don't have a spiky plant like that in our house, but they exist. but he did also point out that there was also a roll of tape. And then we turned, pages later, we were like sort of finding the real things.
Well, actually, on that page, funny you say that, Matthew, because I actually asked my kids if they could do some of the drawings in this picture. So,
whoa, really?
Yeah. So there is at the top left of the illustration where Herman's in this nightmarish kind of corporate scene.
Oh my word! I see it. Go ahead, please like, say.
It's an elephant. It kind of looks like a ginormous mouse with his trunk.
It's wonderful. So
Harry drew that, and to the right of the giraffe is a dog on the phone.
Yes.
And where the tape here is next to the roll of sticky tape, on the wall there's a picture.
The drawing of the spotted something.
So Claire did that. She said that was a cow.
I love it. And oh,
my wife
drew
a pig on the wall too. So my wife drew that. So. So just I like to add all those little things in together.
It's so great. It makes it so much fun to have your eye go to that. And then now it'll be something fun like that I'll have to point out to my students and that also will never unsee. Your eyes will always get to see that treat. That's fun.
Well, I like the idea, though, that you said that it's like an Easter egg. And I don't necessarily set out to have, you know, little convenient little sort of games in there, but I do love books that have lots of layers and like Richard Scarry when I was a kid, I could keep coming back to his books over and over again and just see things that I'd missed in previous reads because he had so much going on, you know.
Yes. I think it's that. I don't see in your illustration that you're trying to hide anything from us. Rather, I see that I don't even know how to say it. It's not just a quote unquote plain illustration. It's sort of, you notice that there's something special about this. And then as you look closer, it's aha, I noticed that this is actually a real stand-up bass. It's not an illustrated stand-up bass, but the colors work together so that it doesn't feel like it was just plopped in there. It feels at first when your eye reads the page, like that everything is painted until again, you look closer and then. So maybe that's just a testament to how well you layer things, that nothing feels like it's out of place. It just feels like, well, here, the illustration is actually a photo, but everything fits in the same world.
Yeah, that's the aim anyway. I'm not sure it's always achieved, but I hope that something doesn't stand out until, like you say, till you have a closer inspection and then see that it's either a photo or a vintage engraving or a cutout. This part of an old ad and put it in the drawing. So, yeah.
I love it. I love the heck out of this book.
It's fun.
you do wonderful work, Gus. And this is me speaking from looking at your other covers and knowing you on Facebook and how much I love connecting with artists on Facebook because it is the greatest treat ever to just see what you're working on.
Thank you.
It's so fun to live in that world. Well, and that way I feel like I know you as an illustrator, and I'm sure all of the other parents and librarians and teachers and everyone else that follows you and all the other artists that people follow, we do it because we get to sort of have something to look at and to play with and to see before your next book comes out, or even things to be excited about really early on. It's like seeing a movie trailer or hearing teasers about different actors that are going to be in whatever movie. It's those little hints that end up almost making you feel, I mean, as a reader, making you feel like you've got a stake in the book from the very beginning, from the idea stages, from the sketching stages. And that's really
fun. It's good, isn't it? I like seeing all that too.
Yeah.
All the early sketches and the little snippets of works in progress. So when the book does come out, it's like, oh, here it is. Yeah, I've been waiting for this.
That's great. Well, Gus, I'm so thankful that I got to catch you. I got to catch you from the future to talk on the podcast tonight for me, this afternoon for you. Thank you again for coming on.
Oh, thank you. It's been fun, huh?
It's been a blast. Well, I'm even more excited because I know it's not going to end here. That I know you and I are going to be chatting more and more and more throughout the coming months and years and everything. Because now that you know that I quite like what you're doing, you'll know that I'm also quite excited about when you've got your next book coming out, and then one after that, and the three after that. But before I let you go, I do want to ask you a question that I ask all of my guests. And I also have learned that this may be a childhood experience that you may or may not have had, but I'll preface it just by throwing it out there, and then we'll explain from there. I'm assembling an all-star kid-lit dream team kickball tournament, and I would love to know what one person, alive or past, from the kid-lit world you would want on your team and why.
Man, that is such it's a really, really hard question, isn't it?
Gus, did you grow up playing kickball at all? Do you have kickball at all?
Oh, I know what it is, but it's
baseball with your feet.
Yeah, no, but it's the same sort of thing with it, I guess, whether it's football, cricket, soccer, whatever. I don't know.
It's all about who's your best mate or who do you look up to or who do you want to keep close.
I reckon probably William Steig.
Oh, of course.
Yeah, because I have no idea what he'd be like as a kickball player, but I think that guy. Just for me, he showed me, as an artist, that your ideas didn't have to kind of be linear. You could be sort of kooky and weird and nonsensical, as long as there was some sort of narrative cord that connects everything. It doesn't matter if it's a little bit offbeat and he had a real childlike sense of wonder about his work, whether it's his illustrations that don't worry about perspective and anatomy. He's just concerned with telling you a good story in the end. And for me, that's probably why he'd be the guy, William Steig, I reckon.
I even like then, based on what you're sharing, the idea that a week or a month or a year after this kickball game, he would be the guy to go to hear. William, tell me again about that time we played kickball together.
I would have loved to have met him.
I know. I think about Neil, how many. Yes. Oh, Neil met him. I'm sure.
Oh yeah. I'm he sure just he rattled did. Off everybody. He knows. But I would have loved to have met him. He's kind of a hero of mine. Yeah.
There's a lot that I think often since becoming a librarian, I think often even how blessed we are just to know their work, and to have thankfully their work still in print and still accessible to kids now, because they are written a different way than how books are written now. But certainly they have informed an awful lot of illustrators and storytellers today. Obviously yourself included.
For sure. Yeah, absolutely.
That's great. Well, Gus, thank you so much again
for
writing beautiful books and sharing them with all of us. It really is quite a wonderful thing that you're doing.
Oh, no, thank you. I'm just chuffed to be on and having a chat to you. And I look forward to chatting next time.
Let's Get Busy is recorded and produced by me, Matthew Winner, in my library studio in Ellicott City, Maryland, and by All the Wonders, a home for readers to discover new books and to experience the stories they love in wondrous ways. Go beyond the books at allthewonders.com. Our theme music is by Blue Ducks. All views and opinions expressed on the show are those of the individuals, myself included, and do not reflect ideas or viewpoints of the publishers of the books referenced. Listeners, there are a ton of great episodes of Let's Get Busy archived and waiting for you at lgbpodcast.blogspot.com. And if this episode connected with you, I'd love to hear it. Leave a comment on the blog or rate Let's Get Busy on iTunes or Stitcher through stars or reviews. Sharing the podcast with friends through Facebook, Twitter, word of mouth, or any other means helps reach more listeners, which leads to more content and more amazing guests. And that is a very good thing indeed. We know you value what you put in front of your kids, especially when it comes to screens and podcasts. That's why we're excited to share a new podcast from our friends at Sleepiest, creating bedtime stories to help your kids fall asleep fast.
Hello, Abby here. If you've got children and find bedtime's a struggle, I'd like to tell you about Coco Sleep, a children's story podcast designed to make bedtime a dream. Coco Sleep turns a chaotic bedtime into cozy bonding time. The stories are delivered in a pace that gently slows. Rumour has it that no one's ever heard an ending. So search Coco Sleep on your favourite podcast app and let's make bedtime a dream. That's K-O-K-O Sleep, and I'll see you there.